This episode of Fireside Chat is brought to you by TickTix. Buying tickets shouldn't be anonymous. We are built for fans, by fans. Available on Android and iOS. Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
This is Dan, and I'm here with Matt, and we're back. It's been a while. It's June 10th, and we're right in the middle of the Stanley Cup Finals, but we're back to talk Flames hockey and, most importantly, talk about the entry draft. Matt, how's your summer going so far?
It's getting there. It's good. Not so good weather today that on our day of our recording, but it's been nice.
How are you watching much playoff hockey?
Oh, pretty much every game this year, so it's been nice to see some of the interesting storylines that have come out.
I think compared to the past couple of years, I don't know what you think, I think this has been the most interesting. If you're not rooting for a single team, which for me after the Flames were out I wasn't, I think this is the most interesting playoff year as a whole in terms of storylines and players and what's going on there. It's been quite interesting to watch.
Yeah, and my thought of Pittsburgh, on our last episode, them basically being the favorite to win it, it's come true, and right now they're up 3-2 in the series, and it looks like they're on their way to Cup number 5. So,
would you have expected Nashville to have gone this far?
Honestly, the Western Conference, I was not overly impressed by any of the teams, so heading into it, that's part of the reason why heading before the season was over, I was hoping that the Flames would actually face Chicago, because I thought that they were ripe for the picking, and it ended up being true that they were. And so the fact that the worst team that qualified for the playoffs is in Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals is not really a shock, as much as it would be in a normal year. The West is basically a bunch of teams that are all very similar, so it's hard to differentiate between one and another.
I think that the interesting thing for me in the finals has been sort of the goaltending story. We have two teams that are both using both goaltenders, and I think that's really showing everybody in the league that having a strong backup maybe is more important than it has been in the past. And I think especially for us here in Calgary, it's maybe going to change the way that management is looking at building that goaltending tandem next year.
Oh, for sure. And
I mean, I would not have expected, Juuse Saros to have been as impactful as he has been in the final round so far.
No, and same with Fleury and Murray on the other side of the coin. So, yeah, it's been interesting. And there's a lot of things to take from each of the teams that reach the finals. You have Pittsburgh, who has an overwhelmingly talented group of forwards and a great goaltender in Murray. And you have Nashville, who's very weak up front but has a very great defense and goaltending. So it's interesting to see the differences in the two teams, how each one of them is very weak in one area and yet extremely strong in another.
To me, I think we're seeing with Pittsburgh that you really don't need that real star defenseman to do well, and I don't think that the Penguins necessarily have that guy. But I think the Penguins, and we see this every year, there's always one team that does really well because the team is a sum of its parts, and together they play better than they should on paper, and I think we're seeing that from the Pens this year. I think everybody knows their role. Everyone's playing that role. And I think the Pens are getting away with potentially more than they should be just because they're playing so well as a unit.
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody thinks that Jake Guentzel's going to be a 50-goal scorer or anything like that. And yet he's got, I think, 13 goals already in the playoffs. Just ridiculous for a rookie.
Every year there's always a weird playoff star.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on from that, and let's look ahead at the Calgary Flames. That's why we're here. And I guess the best place to start as we look ahead to the draft is any comments that we've had, you or I, as sort of since the last time we've talked till now, not necessarily about the draft, but about the team in general. I know that Treliving was on Fan 960 this week for, I'd say about a good hour. By the time you factored in commercials and stuff, I think it's about a 40-minute audio clip on their website. And I was surprised. We didn't hear a lot of what we usually hear about the process and all that from him. He was giving some better answers than usual. And one of the names that came up from him especially was that the Flames are really interested in bringing Versteeg back, a guy you know that I've liked. Matt, what do you think about Versteeg coming back, and what do you think would be a fair compensation for him?
As long as the dollars are right, like, you have to expect that he's going to miss probably a third of the season just because of his injury history. So, like, I think he'll miss like 15 games this year. So, you know, if you factor that in, I wouldn't want to spend more than $2.5 million on a 1 or 2 year contract for him, even though he was a very versatile piece in the organization. And, you know, it's one of those things where if that is going to be, that price tag is going to be exceeded, then perhaps it wouldn't be a bad idea to try and find this year's Versteeg instead, another similar middle six forward that just needs a new situation.
Yeah, I think the value prop on Versteeg is even if we let him go to July 1st, he's not going to get a lot of offers. I think the injury history is going to scare away a lot of teams. So I think that even if we wait till July 1st, we'll get a pretty good discount on him in terms of a comparable player. Realistically, Matt, do you think this guy's a third liner next year?
I honestly don't expect Versteeg to be back, even though, like, if he's back, awesome, great, fine. But I just, for some reason, I don't think it's going to work out.
So whoever replaces them then, that position within the organization, do you think it's a top six or bottom six forward?
Well, I'm expecting that the Flames are going to get a top six winger somewhere, either through trade or free agency, in the next couple weeks. And then figuring things out. Because we have the expansion draft still to come. We're not sure if we're going to be losing a guy like Troy Brouwer or a guy like Brett Kulak. So, like, once all those pieces are sorted out, then you can figure out, oh, well, we can do this or that or whatever. Still too many balls in the air.
I think Versteeg will be back. I think he's a bottom six guy, and as such, I wouldn't want to pay him more than about $1.5 million, especially because of his injury history. I mean, if you look at comparables on the team, you look at a guy like Boma, who's making 2.2. He's oft injured as well, but a lot younger. You know, we've got some guys in there like Stajan who are making more. But if we, you know, we really don't have a player right now next year who's going to be in that $1 million range. All of them are RFAs or UFAs. But
yeah, well, actually, there is one candidate who Treliving did mention will be in the NHL to start next season unless he plays himself out of it, and that's Mark Jankowski. And I wouldn't be entirely shocked if Jankowski starts on the wing on a line, say, like with Backlund, like how Tkachuk and Bennett and other players have been put with Backlund to, like, ease them in. I wouldn't be shocked if something like that happened where he was eased into the lineup in a depth role like that.
But see, to me, if I'm going to bring in, and just looking at the lineup, I mean, if I'm going to bring in Jankowski, I think that there's other guys I get rid of first than say that he's taking Versteeg's spot. You know, we've got a guy like Freddie Hamilton, even a guy like Alex Chiasson, I'd probably bring, if I want to put Janko on the wing, I'd probably bring him in over Chiasson.
True.
You know, I mean, Hamilton's making 6-12. I don't know if he's staying here just because of his brother, but there's got to be better options out there for that one.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that as the...
And then we got Lazar, too.
Yeah. As things sort themselves out, like, I honestly wouldn't be shocked if Stajan and Boma got bought out if they're not claimed in the expansion draft. So there's a lot of permutations that are coming up, because, like, the Flames have to start putting in some younger kids into the lineup and actually trusting them, because like if you look at teams like Nashville and Pittsburgh, they don't have many players like Stajan and Boma and Versteeg and Brouwer on their depth lines taking up spots. They've got younger players trying to figure their game out at the NHL level.
I think around this time every year we start looking at trades that might happen and players that our teams might move. And I think this year we're going to see, maybe not just from Calgary, but I think league-wide we're going to see a ton more deals done and a ton more player movement than we usually would.
Yeah, I think the next 3 weeks are going to probably be the busiest in probably a decade or more.
And it's interesting. I didn't think about it until I heard Tree Living on the radio, but he said you're probably not going to see a lot of deals done before the expansion draft because now you've got to make that guy that you just traded for, you've got to find a way to protect him, which means I'm protecting somebody else.
Yeah, so, like, say, for example, the Flames wanted to get Grubauer from Washington, the goalie back up there. Well, they don't have a secondary guy that they can expose, so they'd have to expose Holtby at that point, which means that we'd have to include McCollum to trade him there, and then we'd have to expose Grubauer, you know, because we don't have a secondary goalie that we can expose. So, like, that's where...
But even if you, say, trade a forward for a defenseman, like, Calgary wouldn't want to bring in a number four at this point because we can only protect three.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be a lot of nonsense in the days and weeks right after the expansion draft. I don't think you'll see more than a couple of surface-level trade, like forward for forward, D-man for D-man, goalie for goalie type trades before the expansion draft.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be pretty similar players, if anything. It's not going to be like a young guy for an older guy.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Demers trade when he was from San Jose to Dallas, where it was Dylan for Demers, two very similar defensemen, one swapped out for the other.
Yeah, I think you'll see hockey moves done before then.
Yeah.
So just to remind people of the timeline for that draft, on June 17th, a week from the day that we record this, the NHL protected lists are submitted. So each team will be submitting their list to the league as far as who's protected, who's not. Then Vegas has the 18th, 19th, and 20th to make their selections from each team. And the Vegas roster will be announced at the NHL awards ceremony on the 21st. And we're not sure exactly what that's going to look like yet, but those are the dates that we have. And then the 23rd is the NHL entry draft. So I would imagine between the 21st and the 23rd, things are going to be very busy.
Yeah, it'll be a fun time.
And talking about that, Matt, why don't we jump right into that NHL entry draft this year?
Yes, that sounds like a good idea.
Every year, you know, we have the entry draft. Teams are using that draft to bring new players into the league, and it's always interesting to see what happens there. I think that overall, if we look at the impressions of this year, it's a fairly weak draft is what most people are telling us.
Yeah, the first couple of picks, Hersher and Patrick, probably would have went 8th to 10th last year. So just to give more of a reasonable look at those players. But then once you get in from like 3rd to about 15 or so, those are more like your middle round picks from last year, and then it drops pretty much on the same level from there on in. So it's more of a typical draft the further you go. It's just the front end is a complete disaster compared to, say, last year or the year before.
And I think the Flames, if you look at the office for the Flames, they would agree with that looking at the movement they've made. So just to recap, as of June 10th when we're recording this, as far as what picks the Flames have, this is one of the few years that we don't have anyone else's pick this year. I believe we only have our picks, and two of those are gone. So as of right now, we have the first round pick, the 16th overall selection, which is our pick. We do not have our second round pick, which will be the 47th overall selection. That was traded to Ottawa for Curtis Lazar. We don't have our third round pick, the 78th overall selection. That was traded to Arizona for Michael Stone. which means the Flames won't be picking again until day two. And they'll pick in the fourth round at 109, the fifth round at 140, the sixth round at 171, and the seventh round at 202nd overall. So, I mean, really, we're missing out on two rounds there that are very important. Second and third round picks are really important picks. But we've also seen the Flames are able to take some guys later in the draft who become impactful. So, Matt, without getting into actual players there, what do you think of the picks that the Flames actually have available? First, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh?
Well, I think the player that the Flames should be able to get at 16, that player should be a quality player, not somebody who's going to be a game breaker. Like, I'm not expecting a first line forward, but there should be some quality there where the upside's maybe a 50-point second line winger or a 3-4 defenseman, something like that. So there is a quality player there available. And, like, the Flames are actually in a good spot because there's about 15 players that are a higher quality, and then it drops a bit from there. And with the Flames picking 16th overall, likely we will get one of them, because, you know, and if not, then I could see the Flames dropping back a few picks, because there's not really much difference from, like, 16 to 22. Yeah, it's just one of those things that it's sort of like a year like the Jankowski pick, where there's not really a ton of difference between any of the picks from 16 to, like, 30 even. So if you can acquire additional assets, then hey, great, awesome. But again, that's one of those things that you can't predict this now, a couple weeks before the draft. That's a draft day thing, because teams generally know who the other teams are going to take. Like, last year the Flames knew that the Canucks were going to take Jewel Levy. So, like, when Columbus took Dubois, they knew that they were going to get Tkachuk. So it's one of those things that when things start sorting themselves out in picks 1 through 15, the Flames will know, oh, we're going to get this guy or that guy, or those guys are going to be off the table and let's trade down. So just one of those things that it'll be interesting to see, but I think there will be enough quality there that the Flames will likely pick at 16.
Are you worried about the fact the Flames don't pick at 2 and 3 as far
not,
as their output
not
for
at
this
all.
Draft?
Not at all. Honestly, Curtis Lazar, he, even though he profiles more as a third, fourth line forward, the likelihood that whatever is available at 47 would turn into something better than that is very slim. And I'd rather take, in this particular draft, I'd rather take the sure thing, because you know that Lazar is going to play for us next year and the year after and the year after that, where whomever 47 is going to be, I doubt it. So, like, I wouldn't have traded the second round pick last year for Lazar, but then again, you know, getting Parsons and Dubé is different than getting somebody who might be more of a third round or fourth round pick quality player instead.
And I think that third round pick to Arizona for Stone was a steal.
Oh yeah,
you're not
sure
going to find a defenseman of that quality anywhere near the third round this year.
Oh no, and the likelihood that Stone will be back, like, I'm sure that's priority number one for the Flames, is making sure he's back, because he was great for the Flames at the end of the season. So, we'll see.
I think that we have to be realistic, as you were saying, for fans going into this draft. We're not going to have a situation like we have the last two first-round picks that the Flames have taken in Bennett and Tkachuk, where I think we have a profile of a player who could probably immediately make the jump to the NHL.
Yeah.
You know, I think that really what we're looking at here is going to be a pick more like the Jankowski pick in 2012, where we're taking a guy who has a lot of potential, but does need some more time in an amateur league, be that the Canadian League, be that, you know, wherever they're playing.
Yeah, like, this
Europe
is not a player that's going to see NHL ice until likely 2020. So
yeah, I think if you want to see whoever it is we take, you come to the rookie development camp on the July 4th through 7th, and you'll see them there. But you know, don't expect to see this year's 16th overall pick, or if we trade down or up slightly, don't expect to see this year's first round pick in a Calgary Flames jersey on opening day of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of, that doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad pick. I just think that, it, you know, we have to be realistic there. And, you know, I think it's going to be a pick more like a Jankowski or a Berchi or 2012-2011 picks, where they're going to need some seasoning time.
Mm-hmm. And that's more common anyway.
It is. And, you know, you and I have had the discussion. I still debate if Sam Bennett was rushed to the NHL or not. You know, we could discuss that all day as far as if he should have maybe been seasoned a little bit more. But either way, I just want to preface for fans, it doesn't necessarily mean that player's a bad player, but looking at where they would fit in the lineup, I don't think you're doing that player a lot of favors bringing them in as a third-line player next year.
Yeah, and especially a guy who the Flames may select, Elias Pettersson. Like, he's 6'2", but he weighs 160 pounds. Like, there's no way that guy's getting into the NHL next year. So, you know, like, there are players like that where they just need time to fill their body out and round things off so that way they're not going to get abused. So, you know, like, it depends a lot on who and what, but I don't see any of the players making the jump right away.
No.
Even next year, like, in 2018-2019, I don't see any of these players playing either, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think like Jankowski, I mean, we drafted Jankowski in 2012, and it's now, you know, going to be 2017 by the time he makes the roster. I think you're looking at a similar timeline for whoever our first pick is this year.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, if you were the GM drafting in this draft, what strategy do you think you'd use, especially in that first round? Would you go for best player available, or would you be focusing on organizational need at this point?
For me, I am always the advocate of, doesn't matter which pick you have, talent, 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 talent. And I don't care if it's a goalie, a defenseman, a center, a right winger, a left winger, as long as they are good, you can always make a trade. And look at Nashville with Seth Jones. Like, they already had an abundance of defensemen. They still took him because he was the best pick available then. And then they went out and dealt him for Ryan Johansson. So if it ends up that the best player available to us at 16 is a center, well, yeah, we have Jankowski, we have Bennett, we have Backlund, we have Monahan. So you can always deal one of them later if need be, if that guy hits his potential as well for some other area that you need more of whatever it is, and
carry
on.
Well, in that case too, you could always trade down one or two spots too and get an asset for doing that. If you say, hey, you know, the next best guy available is a centerman, we don't really need the centerman, a defenseman's coming up, there may be some value to trading down there.
And again, it depends on the who's and the what's. So we'll see. There's a lot of factors that have to go in it, but I don't really care whether it's the 4th, 5th, 6th, or 7th round. Just shoot for talent, because on the odd chance that one of those guys turns out, you're gonna likely be getting a top six forward because of the fact that they fell because they were incomplete. So, you know, if you're getting a skill forward out of that or a defenseman, hey, awesome. And if they bust, okay, sure, why not, who cares. So,
yeah, I don't know if I totally agree with that. I think the talent thing is especially important in the first three rounds. I think with rounds 4 through 7, you can start to target guys who maybe fit a certain profile. Maybe you want to get one bigger player, or maybe you're looking for a right-handed shot or something like that. I think the first three rounds, definitely it's best player available, most talented player available, or most complete, depending on how you look at that. But generally a player in the last three or four rounds is going to have some flaws. And I think that, you know, you have to at that point start to fill in certain roles. And if you look at what the Flames have done in the last few years, they've done a good job of that.
Mm-hmm.
With that, do you see, I mean, we've talked about the Flames trading up or down. Do you see any, and I know that you'll probably say, you know, it could happen, it depends. Do you see any scenario in your mind where the Flames move out of the first round this year?
Yeah, I do.
What's the scenario?
If the Flames can target a high-quality top six right winger and just sacrifice the first-round pick, I could see it. Like,
who would you be targeting for that?
For me, it would be sending the pick to Detroit for Gustav Nyquist. Okay. He's 27, so he fits the same age profile as Backlund, and he had 28 goals a couple years ago. Last year was a bit of a down year, but give me a break. It's Detroit. They were having their worst season in a generation, so
I don't think you're going to get Nyquist straight for the first.
No, but you could possibly get him for that and like a smaller depth prospect or something.
Yeah, Boma or Poirier or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, he had 48 points last year, 43 the year before, 54 and 48. So, you know, he's a fairly good quality second line forward. I could see that being a good fit. And he's a sniper, which is something that the Flames actually lack, so that would also help.
Do you see any scenario in which the Flames get back into rounds two or three?
Only if they trade down. I don't see the point in sacrificing assets to get into the second or third round. Like, I wouldn't trade Poirier for a third round pick this year.
No, I've heard a lot of people say that they hope the Flames can make another Hamilton-like deal, but without a second and third, we don't have the assets to pull something like that off again.
Unless you're sacrificing like Anderson or Shillington or something like that, and at that point, is that a good use of your assets?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that we're going to be out of rounds two and three unless maybe we trade down, like I was saying, maybe the Flames say, hey, we'll move from 16th to 19th. And in doing so, we'll pick up a third. I think you'd have to move significantly down to get a second.
Not really. Past years, you can get a second for just moving down a spot or two. So,
oh, really?
It just depends on how desperate that the other team wants that pick. So, yeah, it just depends really on what the ask is. So,
yeah, I can't see us picking up both rounds.
No.
I think we'll get one or the other. And like you said, I don't know this is the year to trade assets to get back into the draft.
No.
We traded those picks away for a reason, and it's not worth trying to trade back into rounds two or three.
Yeah, plus the Flames currently organizationally have a bit of a logjam in Stockton and in now Kansas City, where they have too many players just in the organization that are needing spots, so having a few less picks this year is also not necessarily a bad thing, just
yeah,
because we have to clear out some of the bodies in order to get like the next wave of people in.
Looking at the players we have, though, Matt, I think that these guys wouldn't be ready for a couple of years to turn pro anyways, the guys at that level, and
true.
I think that logjam is going to sort of fix itself every year. We're going to have a couple guys come off the books, so I don't see anyone in rounds, say, 3 through 7 this year who is going to turn pro next year.
Oh, no.
Or has to turn pro next year. They might in the right organization.
Well, it depends. Like, if you got a Shillington-type situation where you can put a Euro guy into the A right away and it makes sense.
But even then, looking at the guys in this, from what I see in this year, I would rather they play in Europe.
True.
Could you do it? Yeah. But I think the fact that we're... The AHL team is so packed, I think you'd almost be better to say, you know what, every guy this year has some flaws.
Yeah.
And I think the further down we go, the more flaws I'm seeing in the game. And I think they're better to play against men in Europe than come play in the AHL next year.
I agree.
And a lot of the younger guys we're seeing are 16, 17-year-olds who I'd be going after in those later rounds. 17, 18, not necessarily guys that would even be AHL eligible yet. So not 16, 17 or 18-year-olds who I'd be going after. But
yeah.
So with that, then I think we're pretty much agreed that we would want to stick with the picks we have. Let's talk about these picks. We're not going to do the same draft profile that we have in the past. In terms of, you know, going through every round, round by round, I think really there's only one pick that needs a lot of emphasis, and that's the first pick, the 16th overall. And then we'll talk generally about what the Flames might do in 4 through 7.
Yeah, and the number one organizational need is a right shooting forward. And unfortunately, this draft is very scarce with that specific type of player. Only 4 players are right shots in that range, from anywhere from like 10 through say 25. The first one is Martin Nikas, who's on some lists is in the top 10. Honestly, I don't see that particular player getting past Detroit. He's a very similar player to a guy like Martin Havlatter, Yuri Hudler, just your solid middle six.
I've been watching some footage of him, and that's the first thing I thought is this guy looks like a Red Wing.
Yeah, and they pick at number 9, so you can pretty much start to pencil that name on that on the 9th overall pick. The next guy is Nicholas Suzuki, a player that will remind a lot of Flames fans as Sven Berchi. He's a center, but he's only 5'11", and he'll probably be a right winger at the NHL level if and when he makes it. Very similar makeup and body type as Berchi. So if you know you're a big fan of Berchi, then you'll be wanting the Flames to pick Suzuki. If not, then you'll be wanting the Flames to avoid him like the plague.
So, Matt, you have a list of guys here who you think you would like to see the Flames target at 16.
Yeah, I know. I just want to get through the sure. 4 right shots first and then go on that. The next guy is Kalen Foote, Adam Foote's son. He's a defenseman and a right shot from the blue line. And the 4th guy is Robert Thomas, who's a bit of an underrated player. I would actually expect him to... He's rated in the 20s, but I could see him go as high as like 12, depending on if somebody's enamored with him. He's a playmaker style forward.
If you look at the North American skater ratings on NHL.com, Thomas is 22nd.
Yeah, so it'd be a reach for the Flames to pick him there. And he's more of a finesse playmaker style guy, so not really something that the Flames are desperately needing in the organization either. So there's also Owen Tippett, who in some lists is falling a bit, and he is a sniper type, but I'm not a fan of his makeup of his game, so I think he's gonna be more of a bust type guy, someone who's very good for the junior level but will hit that wall as the competition gets better.
Yeah, I don't know. I could see a guy like him going to an organization that needs some depth players. I know he's going to go a lot lower than Vegas picks, but a team like that is just looking for depth.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, like I think he's got some NHL potential. I don't think he's going to be a top 6 in any team, but you got to remember that teams need to fill out their bottom 6 pretty cheap these days too.
Yeah. Now on to the fun part. My favorites for the pick at 16. I like guys with upside the most, and the number one guy on my list is actually the player that I referenced earlier, Elias Pettersson. If you watch video of him, you see a lot of Johnny Gaudreau. He's a very thin, tall player. He's 6'2" and like 160 pounds soaking wet.
6'2", 165 is what he's officially listed at. He's an 18-year-old centerman and left winger from Sweden.
Yeah, and very dynamic, good hands, very quick with his hands, and just he very much reminds me of Gaudreau, just like Clayton Keller last year. Peterson's a bigger physical player, though, like just height wise. So I think that he might go in the top 10 just for that reason, because you can see a lot of similarity between those three players' games. So if he's on the board at 16, I think that's, I would be shocked if the Flames went in a different direction.
Yeah, I don't know about this guy. I mean, I like Peterson because he's pretty much a jack of all trades. He can play in all three zones really well. He's a bigger guy than a Goudreau, and I think, you know, when we compare him to Goudreau, we have to be careful of that because he's not a small guy, but he's quick, and I think he's only going to get quicker from here. And he does have some of that, you know, that hard nose play that the Flames like, a little bit of that Brian Burke like truculence. So yeah, I think if he's available, he'd be a good pick. I think you're right, though. Somebody before us in the top 15 picks might take a flyer on this guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Honestly, I'm not expecting him to get past Los Angeles. And I think that may end up be where he gets selected. The next guy on my list is...
Before you go on, Elias Peterson is listed by Button. I always kind of look at Button, Craig Button at TSN as... pretty much being pretty close to what ended up happening. He listed 8th there. So yeah, I mean, Button thinks he'll probably end up going in the top 10.
Yeah. That would be my like hope he falls to 16. It's doubtful, but hoping that happens. The next guy is a player with a very similar sounding name, Elias Anderson instead of Peterson. And again, a center left winger, and a little smaller, but very much more stocky at 195 pounds at 5'11",
195. So this is more of a Goudreau height player, but a bigger player.
Yeah, and the player he reminds me of almost a carbon copy of Alex Wenberg, the center for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Very similar statistical profile between the two players. Very similar games, very good two-way players, very smart player, guy in the same generic mold of Frolik and Backlund. Is if his offense doesn't translate to the NHL, I would expect him to be a 35 to 50 point player, with Wenberg, who I think had 59 points last year, being more of his upside. But just a very smart, dependable two-way guy.
Both Peterson and Anderson are playing in the Swedish league, the SHL, what used to be the Swedish Elite League. And I think that could be a benefit for us this year. Again, not having to bring that guy over, but still having him play at a very high level, I think is going to be good for that first-round pick this year.
Yeah. The next two guys are a pair of defensemen. Very different defenseman. The first one is, I mentioned earlier, Kalen Foote, Adam Foote's son. He's not a physical guy like his father. He's a 6'3", 198-pound defenseman. Probably will be about 215, 220 when he fills out. Some comparables to him are Brent Seabrook, which... I can see. Just a generic, generally good at everything, not awesome at any one thing type of guy. Decent shot from the point, right-handed shot. So, like, if that's who the Flames walked away with, I would have zero complaints. The Flames' defense prospects is already a strength, adding another guy who's probably better than any of the ones that we already have. Would do nothing but help. So, you know, and he has the size, so that would help as well, because all of the Flames' defensive prospects are average sized, so.
Yeah, and Kalen Foote is 6'3", 209. He plays for Kelowna of the WHL, so a guy who's close by for the Flames. They probably had a lot of looks at him. Kelowna's in the dome a lot. He had some pretty good stats last year in the WHL for a defenseman. He had in 71 games, he had 6 goals, 51 assists for 57 total points. This is a guy who I think is a good two-way defenseman. I think if you're looking at him to be that, you know, that number one, I think more than Seabrook has a better offensive upside than this guy.
Yeah, if I would almost say like a TJ Brody level offense. Like, Brody's not going to light the world on fire at all in his career in terms of offense. Like, he's not going to put up 60 points. And, like, I wouldn't expect if Foot hits his potential to be more than a 35-point defenseman. But, you know, he's just a solid all the way around, can make a good outlet pass, good at both ends of the ice, just a decent overall player. Not going to blow you away, but not bad.
I think you'd be lucky to have Foot turn into a number three in your organization. I think I'd project him as a number four long term.
Yeah, a good number four.
Yeah, and you know, for a guy who is where he is, I think he's probably going to get a few extra looks just because of who his dad is. You know, I think that might help him out.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be shocked if he went in the top 10 either, just for that fact as well.
Yeah, I would like to see actually the Flames take a defenseman. It's been a while since we've taken a defenseman first overall, or first round, I should say. And I think that we have enough forwards. I don't know that we need a draft a forward to fill that role. I think we've got enough centermen and wingers coming through the system. But I like the idea of bringing Foot in. And if he makes it to 16th, I would probably actually take him over Peterson.
I'd probably take Peterson. It would be a tough coin toss, though. It's tough because they're both very good. So
just looking at the depth chart for this organization, I think that we have enough young forwards coming in, and guys, you know, who are surprising us. If I look at the defensive side of guys who not turned pro yet. Adam Fox is really the only guy there who, you know, I think really has some potential.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I think I would still take Peterson, but, like, it would be a coin toss pretty much. Like, 60-40 Peterson to Foot, but, yeah, it'd be tough. I could, you know, if the Flames took Foot with Peterson on the board, I'd be like, okay, sure, I can understand that. So I wouldn't be overly disappointed either way.
Let's just put this scenario in place. Let's say Peterson and Foot are both on the board at 16. Would you be willing to trade down, knowing you're not going to get Peterson, get Foot and pick up, let's say, a third-round pick?
It would depend on how far and if you knew what pick 17, 18, 19, and 20 are type of thing, like depending like wherever you end up. Like, I wouldn't want to, like, if those were the two guys on the board and like everybody else is kind of below them, like I wouldn't want to sacrifice
no, but
getting
let's say
one
you knew
them.
That you could trade down and still get Foot.
Yeah, then for sure, but yeah, that'd be tough. So,
just reading here for fans that don't know Foot, his write-up on eliteprospects.com says that Foot is an assertive two-way defenseman that reads plays quickly and understands both the offensive and defensive sides of the role that he's put into. He plays a consistent game and can be trusted to create chances from the back and on special teams. He uses his size to gain leverage against other players, though he isn't overly physical. His hockey sense is outstanding, and his ability not just to read, but to start and on the odd occasion finish plays is overtly indicative of his talent at a higher level, and that's by Curtis Joe. And, you know, it's funny because you always read that about guys who are kids of NHL players. They have a really good hockey sense, and I think that's probably just because they've grown up with the game more than other players have.
Yeah. And moving on to the next guy on the list is a player that is very similar to one of the Flames prospects, Timothy Liljegren. And he's basically Oliver Shillington all over again. And he was expected to be a top five pick like Shillington was and fell because his defensive game is kind of mediocre, even though he's a very good offensive defenseman and very smart in the offensive zone and a good skater, good speed, good agility, just as a mess defensively. So that's another player that's available. It's literally Shillington all over again. So if the Flames like what they have in Shillington, they might opt to go and if he's on the board at 16, go and get another one.
I'm not too familiar with this guy. He's also playing in the Swedish Elite League right now. But from everything I've seen, he's expected to go about 10 or 11.
Yeah, it, similar to Shillington, who was expected to be in the first round when we picked him. He ended up falling, and Liljegren may end up doing the same thing. So I've seen him anywhere from 3 to 12 in my research. So the Flames being at 16, it's possible. So.
Yeah, if you take a look, he's rated number 10 by HockeyProspects.com, number 8 by ISS, number 22 by Future Considerations, number 20 by McKean's Hockey, and number 6 by the NHL Central Scouting among EU players. So, yeah, this is a guy who's all over the board. I think that there's better options out there for the Flames. This is the kind of guy that I think you might wait and see if he drops to round 2, but I don't think I would pick him not having a second-round pick. I think there's still other guys on the board who I would take over him.
And the wild card is the Russian guy. He's a center and a right winger, Klim Kostin. He's 6'3", 190, and a fairly good dynamic offensive player. It's just the whole Russian factor that he may end up going very early, even in the top 10 if a team likes him, or he could fall out of the first round. So, skill-wise, he's probably one of the top 6 or 7 players in the draft.
Well, the NHL's ranked him number 1 among European skaters.
Yeah, and honestly, I think if he was Canadian, I think he might be rated 2nd or 3rd overall this year. It's just the whole Russian factor. You know, it happens every year. There's always a good Russian player, and you know, where is he going to go, basically? The quality is there. It's just, does that team, whomever is going to pick him, want to deal with the potential headache?
Well, and that's why I think the Flames not having a 2nd or 3rd round pick might be more likely to take a run at this guy, because they can't, you know, if he falls to round 2, it does us no good. There's no chance he falls to round 4.
No.
So I think you might see the Flames say, you know what, maybe they take a little bit of a flyer on this guy, even with the Russian factor, knowing that, you know what, if we want him, we have to take him in round 1.
Yeah.
Not so much for the Russian players, but something to remember with other players like Swedish guys and, you know, Finnish is the Olympic factor, right? This year, NHL players aren't going to participate. Russia's still got a good number of players over in the KHL, but some of these Swedish guys might be good enough to make the Olympic roster this year.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and not saying that really helps the development a ton, but that's a great sign too, if you've got players that are playing at that higher level. So something to think about when we're looking at these players as well.
Yeah. And like, there are other players that will likely be available, like guys like Michael Rasmussen and Eli Tolvanen. It's just that they're, like, in Rasmussen's case, he's one of those players that's rated highly because he's big, not because he's skilled. So, I wouldn't bother. And Tolvanen has a good shot, but nothing else. And, like, the defensemen are just kind of there. Like, there's nobody else that stands out as, oh, that guy, you know, we need to select that player. So, like, honestly, I don't see the Flames trading down this year, because if once you get past 16, if one of the players that we didn't mention, or like we mentioned, isn't on the board, then sure, but like, there's not really going to be any difference between a guy like Yamamoto or Poling or any of the other guys that might be available. So at that point, just get the dartboard out and toss.
Yeah. So I mean, if we look at some of the pundits out there, a friend of the show, Ryan Pike, who writes for the Hockey Writers and Flames Nation, he thinks that Klim Kostin will be the Flames pick at 16. Again, going back to Button and what he was thinking, he thinks that 16, the Flames might take Kyler Yamamoto. another right winger, or I guess center left wing, sorry. I think Yamamoto is, I like his game, but I don't want to draft a 5'8" player.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, Yamamoto probably has the highest skill level of anybody in the 12 to 30 range. It's just that, do the Flames want to get another Gaudreau in terms of size? And I'm not sure that Yamamoto is as talented as Gaudreau. I think a comparable would be Anthony Beauvillier. Just a good player. Probably will be a top six forward in the NHL, but the Flames are kind of small.
Gaudreau is so good that we can overlook his size. From what I've seen about Yamamoto, I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is just going to be another guy who becomes your quote-unquote small guy. And yeah. I think that, you know, we're already seeing enough problems with Gaudreau getting slashed and that sort of thing that I don't know I want to start putting another small guy through.
No, like, we already have Mangiapane and Matthew Phillips. Like, if those guys turn out, hey, awesome. But, like, then that creates another problem of, okay, we've got now two or three very small players in the organization. And
I would rather take the flyer on the small player in rounds 4 through 7.
Same here.
So I don't think Yamamoto is going to go. I'd be happy with any of those guys. I wouldn't be unhappy if Klim Kostin was our pick. I think.
No, me either.
I think I'd be worth, especially in a draft year like this year, I think it's worth taking a flyer on the Russian.
Yeah. And more than anything this year, I think the Flames can go for the home run. Like, last year, the Flames needed to get quality because even then the system needed quality more than anything, and they got it between the first four picks with Parsons, Dubé, Fox, and Tkachuk. So this year, why not go for the home run? Get a guy who might have that first-line potential. That's part of the reason why I like Peterson, why I like Anderson. Foot, to a lesser extent, I think he'll be a good number four. And Kostin would be my four guys that I would most like the Flames to pick. After that, it's, you know, after that, it's, is this guy a little better than that guy? You know, like, you're starting to split hairs at that point.
Yeah, I don't think Anderson or Peterson are going to be on the board when we pick.
No, neither do I. I'm kind of thinking all four might be gone by the time we pick.
I think Kostin's going to scare a lot of people because he is Russian. I don't think he'll go in the top 10. I think he'll probably go between 10 and 17.
Yeah.
I would not be opposed to taking Foot. I don't think we need a guy who's going to be a number one defenseman.
No. I know. No, like, if that's who the Flames walk away with, awesome. On our recap show, I'll be going, hey, the great pick. Awesome.
Yeah.
Fits what we need.
And I think, too, after what we did last year, we took a guy who, you know, in Tkachuk, who is a second-generation player, and we've heard from him in interviews and stuff how much his dad has helped him, you know, transition in and, you know, been there to be that rock. So that might make the Flames more likely to say, you know what, let's do it again. Let's take another second-generation guy who has dad in his corner.
Yeah, really look at Josh Manson in Anaheim, how he's developed into a high-quality player for the Ducks, and yet he had no pedigree either, other than his father played in the NHL for a number of years.
Yeah, I mean, his father's at a very different level than, a Keith Tkachuk or a Adam Foote.
Yeah, but he's still the same thing, grew up around the game. And
to me, I've always said that pretty much anything can be taught except for hockey sense.
Yeah.
I think hockey sense is one of those things, you have it or you don't.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, and that's exactly why, like, with all of the Flames pick, like, hammer hockey sense first above everything else, because if they figure it out, then you've got a good high-quality player on your hands instead of just a filler guy.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I guess I bring it up because I think that we can see already at the WHL level that Foot has that hockey sense. And, you know, I would be willing to say, you know what, he's got some rough edges we need to smooth out.
But give me a break. Anybody who's not in the top two at the age of 18 is going to have rough edges.
Yeah, but I think more so than usual. Like, if this was last year's draft, I think Kalen Foote would fall to round two.
Probably. Or, like, the last couple of picks, like 25 to 30.
And if you look at our blue line, I think, you know, Giordano's aging, but let's say that we've got Brody and Hamilton as the two upcoming guys. We've got Shillington, Anderson following up there. I think we have enough time to develop Foote correctly that by the time we're ready for him, there's going to be a spot in the lineup for him. So I don't think we need to rush him. I don't think we need to, you know, have him ready next year. I think this is a good developmental pick.
Yeah, I agree. And it's just, it'll be interesting to see what's on the board and available at 16. Draft day this year will be probably more interesting than usual, just for the equivalency between all of the players, basically in terms of talent, from about 5 right through till about 20. So, like, there's not a huge drop-off at any point. It's just a sliding scale.
And because
scale,
of that,
so
I think you're going to see less teams moving up or down as well.
Yeah.
I think if you can't move into the top 5, it's really not worth moving up or down very much.
Yeah, like, it just depends on what you're shopping for, basically. Like, there's plenty of larger players that have upside. There's plenty of high-skill, smaller players. It just, whatever you want, we got it, basically. So it just, it'll depend on what the priorities of teams from Vegas right through to us are, and what they want most of all, and see how it goes.
For sure. Not having to pick in rounds 2 or 3, the Flames are going to have to rely on late rounds in order to fill out the rest of their stock for this year, which gives them a pick in round 4, round 5, round 6, and round 7 as we sit here and record on June 10th. I feel more confident this year than I probably would have in the past that the Flames can get something of value in those last rounds. I think you'll definitely see them take a goaltender. You've mentioned it before.
Actually going to disagree. This year, I don't think they will.
No?
Normally, I'm a fan of, as I've harped on for many years, that, like, take a goalie every year. But I think that with the quality that Parsons and Gillies and Rittich have shown, I think that the Flames may take a year off of picking a goaltender. Just because we have 3 really high-quality players for a change. And
but again, 3 guys who are, you know, either pro or have turned pro.
Yeah, I know. I could see them taking it, but I would not expect it.
And, you know, looking at those last 4 picks, the Flames since 2008 have done a lot better than I think a lot of other teams maybe have. You know, people always cite the fluke in round 7 who makes it to the NHL, you know, that sort of thing. But we've actually done pretty well. In 2008, we took a guy in the 4th round who you might know. His name's TJ Brody.
Even in the 3rd round, got Lance Boma that year.
Yeah. The next year, in 2009, the Flames took Joni Ordio as a goaltender who projected to be pretty good. You know, made it to the NHL, I think, kind of got the short end of a stick, but a good pick there. 2010, I remember we were very excited about John Ramage as a pick, and he never really turned into much of anything.
Yeah.
But in round 5, Michael Ferland, a guy who we could debate if he should or shouldn't have, but played a lot of first-line minutes this year.
Oh, and is looking like a top 6 forward, so we'll see.
2011, the Flames got Goudreau in this 4th round.
And Laurent Brossoit, who was subsequently traded to Edmonton.
That's true. Yep. 2012, the Flames got Kulak and in the 4th round, Culkin in the 5th round. So, again, 2 guys there that, you know, have become part of this team. 2 guys who've been around for a while. Brett Kulak has 30 NHL games now under his belt. So, you know, not necessarily guys that we're going to project to be top-line players. And I think even Ferland isn't a first-line center on an ideal team. But guys that are contributing to the team.
Yeah. And even Gillies in the 3rd round that year was a good pick.
For sure.
2013 was a bad year outside of the Monahan pick, so we'll just skip that.
I think Poirier and Klimchuk are going to give the organization value. I don't necessarily think they will necessarily be in a Flames jersey.
True.
But I think there's value to be had from both those players.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2014.
2014 is Bennett and a whole lot of nothing at this point. Hickey might turn into something, but
Hickey and Mattson, I think there's some potential with.
Yeah, everybody else, it's starting to get to the point of put up or shut up.
But I mean, just looking at those bottom, you know, anything after three that year, we picked first, second, third, sixth, and seventh, and our sixth and seven were Mattson and Carroll. So yeah. Mattson maybe, Carroll probably not. 2015 in round five, we picked Pavel Kharnikov. In round six, we took Andre Mangiapane, and in round seven, Riley Bruce. I think Mangiapane's got something.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a quality NHL player.
And
Kharnikov might, if he ever decides to come back. There's still something there, but
yeah, I don't know. There's something there, but I don't know it's NHL level. I think Kharnikov might be not the type of player, but just type of career, very similar to a Jamie Lundmark type who gets a cup of coffee with a bunch of teams hoping to make something of them. Or even like a Pavel Brendel in that way. But ultimately, I don't think he's going to amount to much at the NHL level.
Yeah.
I think he's better to stay in Europe because I think he'll play at a higher level there than he ever would over here. And then last year, the Flames did quite well in the draft. Round four, we took Linus Lidstrom. Round five, we took Mitchell Mattson. And in round six, we took Itu Tuola as well as Matthew Phillips. And round seven, we took Stefan Falkowski. So some guys, I mean, we're only a year out, but I don't think any of those guys necessarily become top six players, but I think that there's some potential there, especially a guy like Phillips.
Yeah, and it's interesting to note that in each of the cases, like the last two drafts have been the first two that I consider to be under Brad Treliving, because the 2014 draft, Treliving just had got hired, and it was a Brian Burke show. You can tell by the type of players that we took, it was a Brian Burke draft.
Yeah, well, Treliving hadn't been around long enough to influence things.
Yeah, and yeah, whatever. But anyhow, looking at the depth picks, you have guys that have size with Riley Bruce, Itu Tuola, Mattson, and Falkowski. So just larger physical players. Falkowski and Tuola have better offensive upside while being physical and big. And the other guys are, well, Bruce is already out of the organization, and Mattson is a project that he's going to the NCAA, and we'll see in a couple of years whether there's anything there. And then you've got high skill players that we just have to see if they can translate in Lindstrom, Phillips, Mangiapane, and Kharnikov. And I think that that game plan will dictate what the Flames have going into this draft in rounds 4 through 7. You're likely going to see, just based off of past results, two high skill players and two larger guys. And we'll see a couple of those players, Mangiapane and Falkowski, were both overager guys in their draft plus 1 year, I do believe. So the Flames could end up selecting a couple overage players as well. It just depends largely on what's available. I don't see the Flames going for any guys like Austin Carroll or Kanzig types or Riley
and
Bruce types.
Well, you bring up a good point. I mean, if you look at the last two, they've picked a lot of the same type of players. You need to diversify at some point too. So, you know, I can't see them going with a lot of the smaller guys again. I think we have enough of the bigger prospects in the pipeline. So I wouldn't be surprised if we maybe see them try to get somebody who's maybe not necessarily the most skilled guy, but I think we need some speed maybe the guys who aren't necessarily the best players but are very quick. And I think that I would not be surprised if the Flames lean a little heavier on the blue line.
I could see that.
They've taken a lot of forwards the last couple of years. And I think that they might lean a little heavier on the blue line. The other thing I note about Treliving's drafts with Calgary, he's very similar to Sutter, and then he likes the Canadian boys. You know, I mean, if you look, most of his players are OHL or WHL guys. And so I think we'll probably see those last four rounds being used on a lot of domestic players. They're easier to see. They're easier to scout. And I think that...
And I could see them going...
They're easier to convert, too.
Yeah. Alternatively, I could see them going with some guys that you can park in the NCAA for a little while as well, just to see, like, you know, give yourself an extra couple of years to see what you got.
Yeah, I think this draft year, I don't know, maybe. That was very much a Jay Feaster thing, was all the NCAA guys. Maybe. I mean, this year, I think that by the time you get down to those levels, the players aren't going to be that different. It's just a matter of who do you want, and you're going to draft more by type than by name.
True. And, like, that's why, like, it's so hard to project on what any of those type of picks are going to be, just because of the fact that you don't know what picks 1 through 90 are going to be, so...
Yeah.
It's hard to project on, let's target this specific guy. You know, is that guy going to even be there? So, just generically, skill and size tend to be the modus operandi for the Flames in the depth rounds last two years.
I can see the Flames also targeting more guys who are right shots in the lower round.
So can I.
You know, maybe not necessarily the biggest guy or the most skilled guy, but I can see him saying, you know what, this guy's good enough and he's a right shot, let's bring him in.
Yeah.
And if they're debating between, say, two guys, I could see them giving the benefit to the right shot.
Yeah, I could too.
So
why not? We don't have many in the organization.
Well, that's why,
so
I think it's a good time to start filling that out. I wouldn't prioritize that in rounds 1, 2, or 3, but in the bottom four rounds, I think you've got a little more liberty to say, you know what, these two guys are pretty close, let's take the right shot.
Yeah, if I was running the draft, for me, what I would be doing is kind of treating this entire draft as a bit of a, if you get anything out of it, awesome, so let's go for home run picks with 1 through 7, like just highest upside possible. If they've burned out and it's a crap draft year, you know, so like you're giving yourself a little bit of a mea culpa there, and just try to get as high of talent as possible, more so than in past years, even just go for it.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I was thinking that earlier. I was thinking, you know what, this is really an experimental year. Maybe try something different. Maybe get a player you normally wouldn't. And, you know, I don't think there's many guys, especially in those lower rounds, that are going to be expected to develop anyways, especially looking at the last couple of years and the, you know, lower round picks that we have. So why not experiment? Why not try somebody different?
Yeah. Throw the dart at the board. If it hits, hey, awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, and that could be good for us. You know, that could be good to, you know, to try some different, see if it works out. I'm also not totally convinced the Flames will draft in all rounds 4, 5, 6, and 7. I still think something's brewing, and I think at least one of those picks is not going to be ours come the NHL interdraft.
I can agree with that. I honestly, wouldn't be shocked if the Flames ended up with the draft only having 3 or 4 picks instead of 5. So
draft it, 1, go home and draft 7.
Yeah.
Or just draft round 1 and shut down your table.
We'll see. I'm expecting a lot of, like, expansion draft movement. Like, I'm sure that the Flames may end up, like, even if they're wanting to Vegas to pick a specific player, they could offer, like, say, the 4th round pick for, you know, we want you to take Stajan or Brower or whatever.
Yeah, and that's why I'm thinking we may not have all 4 of them. I could see the 4th or the 5th round pick being given to Vegas to not take somebody, or
to specifically take this player.
So. Yeah, or being given to Vegas after the word saying, hey, you took the guy we wanted, now we're going to give you Boma and a fifth, because I think the biggest asset Vegas can get this year is draft picks. So I think you're going to see a lot of moves made with them, simply acquiring picks, no matter where in the draft they are.
Yeah, and Vegas specifically, I could see them walking away from this draft with like 15 or 16 or 17 picks just because of teams. We don't want you to take this player. Here, take this draft pick.
Well, I think so. What's more likely is you'll get a guy like Treliving to say, you know what, it's going to be easier for you to get a guy like Fleury than it is for me to get a guy like Fleury, so you draft Fleury with the condition that then we're going to turn around the next day and give you Boma and our fourth for Fleury.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's going to be as many deals to not take a certain guy. I think there's going to be a lot more, hey, the cost of you acquiring this guy and then us acquiring him from Vegas is cheaper than us acquiring the player directly.
Yep, I
That's
agree.
Just my prediction. So
it's going to be a fun couple weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun couple weeks. I think it'll be an interesting draft, and I always like to see what happens in those late rounds. And as always, Matt and I are going to be at the Flames Rookie Development Camp, which is at Winsport on July 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. So as we get close to that date, make sure if you want to come, you check calgaryflames.com for all the details. Generally, the last day, so July 7th, there's a scrimmage, so it gives you a chance to see these players. And we always like to go out and see the new draftees, see the new recruits, and also talk to them. So if you listen to some of our early July shows, generally the one right after that, we'll have some interviews with as many of these guys as we can talk to. So it'll let you get to know some of the new Flames. And I'm sure we'll talk before that. We usually do a July 1st show. But Matt, before we wrap up, anything else you want to talk about as far as the entry draft?
No, I'm good. Just waiting patiently for it to happen, see what happens and all that fun stuff.
Couple housekeeping notes, I guess, before we leave. The biggest one is the Flames have changed their ECHL affiliate. Last year it was the Adirondack Thunder, and they've changed to the Kansas City Mavericks now. So that'll be their new ECHL affiliate. And really, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, this doesn't matter. I don't know where the two teams ended last year in ECHL standings, but it's a place to park two or three prospects and probably Mason McDonald again. So not a huge deal. But I wonder if, as part of the deal, the Flames have made the Mavericks take on the Scorch mascot.
We'll see.
Don't expect them to have a Flames name or anything. The Flames does not own this team. They're simply affiliated with. And the biggest difference for fans that don't know between the AHL and the ECHL, most AHL teams are owned, if not fully, as a majority ownership by the NHL team. So they're really there just to act as a developmental league. In the ECHL, I think all the teams, if not a good majority of them, are independently owned. So those owners want to make money. So they're really trying to have competitive teams. So it's not as likely you're going to put a player into the ECHL just to be developed who isn't, you know, going to help that team win, because the ECHL teams want to be there for the win. So it's, we'll see who goes down there. I was surprised how many players were in the ECHL this past year from the Flames. And the last thing, and one thing you and I have talked about for a while, is we know that the NHL is going to be changing jersey affiliates next year. Adidas will be taking over as the new jersey supplier. The 20th of June, the new jerseys will be unveiled, according to the NHL. So, Matt, any predictions for what we might see from the Flames, or anything you do want to see from the new Flames jerseys?
All I want is for the flags to go away and it to be red. And that's about
that's
it.
That's too much to ask, my friend. You can't have both no flags and red.
Yeah. Like, I'm not... After the piecemeal third jersey thing where it was, like, five different designs with, like, one part from each with that script logo third jersey, I'm not overly optimistic that whatever it will be good. So...
I don't know. If you remember the way that the RBK stuff worked, is there's pretty much a template, and you just picked a template and, you know, change your colors on it. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was the same this year.
Yeah. I'm just hoping that it's not too bad. Anything, you know, that's better than what the Flames currently use for their home and away would be awesome. But
so we've had a lot of our fans chime in on this on Twitter and Facebook, and a lot of people are saying they want to go retro, and I can't see the Flames go with an exact copy of the 80s retro jersey they've used for the third jersey. If for no other reason, it's not going to sell. Most of us who wanted it bought it. But what would you feel if the Flames went with a retro feel and took the black out?
I'd prefer they keep the black and use the retro as a third jersey. Like, I know they're not going to have a third jersey next year, but I'd rather them keep the black in somehow. It's just... Yeah, I can see both arguments. That's why I'm kind of just hoping that it's not a disaster when we actually see it. And
what if we were to go with something like the current Flames third jersey, take the script off and just put a C on it and straighten out the shoulders?
It changed the font on the back, and I think you and the numbers. I think you have a good jersey, but
yeah, make sure that the 5 and the 2 aren't the same digit upside down.
Yeah, stuff like that. Like if you made it like the regular Flames font and that,
yeah,
and made things normal on it. Basically, remove some of the stupid elements like the shoulder yoke. Like just straighten it out instead of the point. Like that, if you got that, I think that would be a good jersey. It's just have to wait and see. You know, at each of the last handful, like ever since the 03-04 jersey reveal, I think each one of the Flames jerseys since then has been quite terrible. So we'll see. And you know, I haven't been impressed with what they've done, so you know, I'm just hoping that it's not another horrific monstrosity, and we'll see.
To be fair, the 03-04 jerseys wouldn't have come out if it wasn't for the horsehead jersey. I mean, it was the same pattern, just, you know, different colors, different logo. So sometimes you need to go with something that's not as popular in order to, you know, get to where we want to be.
True.
I wouldn't be opposed to going back to the mid-90s white C, the one with the black in it, and having a white C on the home jersey instead of a black C.
Yeah.
You'd have to change up the striping patterns a little bit, but if you look at the third jersey, I think you could... You've got enough white there that you could go with a white C with a black border on it.
Yeah, I'd have to see... Like, if that's what they ended up doing, I'd have to actually see it to...
And I think that gives that retro nod that I think people want as well.
Yeah. It'll be interesting one way or the other.
I like the black. I think the black adds another dimension. I mean, the 80s jerseys were more orange than red. And so I like the red that they've been using on their modern jerseys more than the 80s color.
But well, believe it or not, it is actually the exact same color.
Isn't?
Yeah. It's just every Flames jersey has had the same color of red except for the Heritage Classic jersey.
Huh.
It's so just one of those visual things. Yeah, it's just one of those visual things that if you have a darker color beside it, it makes it look darker.
Well, I would be okay if they wanted to keep the black, and I like the black myself. I didn't like the pedestal look of it when they unveiled it, but I like the look of the black on the jersey as an extra striping color, and it gives you that accent for pants and that sort of thing to give you something different. You're not going to wear yellow pants. So I like that, but I'll be curious to see what they do with it. We know there won't be a third jersey next year. No teams are going to have a third jersey, just like when the RBK came in, because they want you to buy the home jersey. Matt, how would you feel in 2018, 2019 if the Flames were to bring in a third jersey, but instead of going retro, they were to go with another black jersey?
I would be fine with that. It would just depend on what they do with the current set and see if you can just port the black into a third jersey and it makes sense. So we'll see.
Back when the horsehead jersey came out, I bought one at Jersey City, and I did a bit of an operation on it. I took a red C off the home jersey, and I stuck it on the front, and that was the first dark-on-dark that I'd ever seen for Flames logos. And I thought it looked really sharp. And so when they took the black C on the red, I really liked that as well. So I think if they were to do something like that, a black jersey with a red C, I mean, we saw that sort of with Stockton last year. I think it could look really sharp as a third. I wouldn't want it as the home.
No.
I think it could look well good as a third.
Yep.
So.
Our next show will be discussing our thoughts and reactions to this.
We will have seen it by then. So we will be back with everyone. We're not sure the exact date, but it'll be after the draft, before free agency, and we'll profile what the Flames did at the draft and look ahead to July 1st and free agency. Before we go, I want to remind everyone, if you haven't yet, please take our audience survey. It helps Matt and I to know what we're doing well, what kind of stuff you guys want to see different, and what we can maybe change or do better for next year. You know, we're all about making sure that what we're putting out here is what you guys want to hear. So we would love to have your feedback. And as a way to thank you for doing that, everyone who fills in the feedback and puts their name and email address at the end, you don't have to, but if you give us your name and email, we will do a draw in late July for a prize pack. And we'll post the information on what's going to be in that prize pack at firesidechat.ca. But generally, it's some Flame stuff, some Fireside Chat stuff, t-shirts, hats, that sort of thing. So take this survey. We'd love to hear from you, and it helps us to shape the show. And Matt, you enjoy the next 3 weeks and what's going to be an interesting time for the league, and we'll talk to you again after the draft. Both drafts, I guess.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good summer, and we'll be back soon at a time yet
to
be determined.
It's weird because hockey's back, but it's still summer. Like, hockey's not back, but this is the most interesting time of the year for what we do.
Yep.
So we'll talk to everyone before July 1st.
Take care.
This has been another Fireside Chat. Don't forget to subscribe to the show at firesidechat.ca. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/firesidechat. And to follow us on Twitter at Fireside Podcast. Catch our show on the podcast channel at thehockeywriters.com. Fireside Chat is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike license. Hosted by Dan Stevenson and Matt Dubourg. Produced and edited by Peter Marino and Ryan Coetz.